seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Yes, we are back with another episode of Golf Weekly with myself, Dave McIntyre. No Fionn Devonport this week, but I am joined by Gary Murphy. How are we doing, Gary?
Very well.
Good man, good man. And the great John Huggan as well. John, you're most welcome. Good to have you back, sir.
Who's this great John Huggan? I don't recognise him.
So. Well, look, we try and plumose all of our special guests. But that's the end of it. That's that part of it out of the way. So don't expect much more where that came from. Big week, I guess, in terms of golf news. We're going to get around to as much of it as we possibly can over the next three quarters of an hour or so. The headlines this week, I guess we can now stop asking the question, what's wrong with Scotty, when clearly there was never an awful lot wrong with the world number one. He's cruised home at TPC Southwind. It's the FedEx St. Jude Championship, won it by 8 strokes. The first of this season's playoff events. That's his second win of the season, but it is obviously his first since January. It's actually the longest stretch between wins for Scotty Scheffler since 2023. On the DP World Tour, Jeff Winter thrilled the locals. He won the Danish Golf Championship by 3 shots. It was a bunch of lads chasing him down, including his Danish compatriot Rasmus Højgaard. Some real fireworks in the closing holes produced by those two. We'll mention that later because Gary has some good news, and it's or some news and not none of it good surrounding that event and its immediate future. And Thailand's Chino Chukwui won the LPGA Tour event in Portland, and Stuart Sink won on the Champions Tour, beating Miguel Angel Jimenez in a playoff. We will also, as we do, give a customary mention to Live Golf later in the podcast. We'll mention the Walker Cup as well, because the US Tour, the US team was announced this week, and the GB&I team is due to be announced next week ahead of next month's event in La Hinch, which I know, Gary, you are very much looking forward to. So look, we'll start with the big news. Scotty Scheffler's back in the winner's circle. 21st PGA Tour victory, the third youngest player to reach that number after Tiger. And Jack, it's his second win by 8 strokes or more. That ties second on the tour in the last 40 years. No prizes for guessing who tops that particular chart. Tiger won by 8 strokes more than 10 times in his career, which is just absolutely incredible. So started the day with a 2-shot lead, Gary. Overcame that stroke of bad luck, which I want to question you on in a few minutes about when the ball ricocheted off a sprinkler after a bunker shot. But your thoughts overall on how he performed and what you make of the timing of it, because I'm sure he would trade that level of form and his ability to close it out for a week or two in the summer when he was playing the US Open, the PGA Championship and the Open Championship.
Yeah, I think when you watch how he played last night, now he's played all season, you know, there wasn't a huge difference really. And it was kind of incredible to note that he hasn't won a major this year. Because give or take, you know, guys turning up and just having the week of their lives, and there seemed to be about 5 or 6 different guys doing that all season. He absolutely cruised last night, and it really didn't look a whole lot different to what he's been doing all season. I guess, to be fair to a lot of players and to give credit where it's due, it's just very difficult to win on the PGA Tour. And it's also more difficult to win majors. But he seems so comfortable, you know, because I've never played the course, but I've obviously seen it a lot over the years and having spoken to guys that have played it, it's very demanding. There's nowhere to hide on it. So that at times can make it even more difficult to hang on to a big lead. But he seemed in just cruise control the whole way through.
Yeah, John, it was the Scotty Scheffler we've become accustomed to seeing over the last couple of years, wasn't it? That when he's in somewhere close to his A game, he's just so much better than the rest. Like, he only took a 2-shot lead into the final round. Sam Burns, again, a little bit of a no-show in a big tournament and a big event, and seen almost overawed by the fact that he was playing Scotty. Is it something that has surprised you? Had you maybe considered the fact that we weren't going to see this again from him this year, and we'd have to wait till next year before we saw the guy who was winning so routinely over the last 3 seasons?
Yeah, well, I've always kind of subscribed to the theory that your absolute superstars You know, Rory, Scotty Scheffler would be the two obvious ones at the moment. Three or four times a year, at least, they're basically unplayable, those guys. I mean, they'll go out and they'll play so well that nobody else can touch them. And I think that's what happened last week. I think Scheffler played a little bit better than he has been. And that was the intimidation factor that has maybe been slightly missing. You know, he's been beaten, as Gary mentioned, five or six times this year in situations where you wouldn't have expected that he would lose. But I think it's probably because it's all about what you put in the other guy's head. There was a little bit of vulnerability about Scheffler that was, you know, unexpected and unfamiliar over the course of this season in a lot of events. And I think that's what partly at least produces the great play from the other guy. I mean, he sees a chance. He doesn't think, I mean, Sam Burns is too familiar with Scheffler, I think. He's his big buddy. He goes out there and he thinks, I can't beat this guy. You know, that's in his head, maybe not quite this extreme is that, but it's certainly in his head that he's this guy's better than me before he even starts. And Scheffler would play on that as well. I mean, he played better because of that knowledge. And I think that's at least partly to do with what happened yesterday. But, you know, he's been incredibly consistent this year, although I'm not, I think I've said on here before, I'm not a big fan of consistency. I think it's the most overrated quality for any professional golfer. I mean, you want to hit four or five home runs a year and not be finished seventh every week. No one's going to remember if you were seventh every single week, albeit you might get a footnote. But it's who wins that actually counts. And this has been coming for a little bit. It just, the circumstances had to be in Scheffler's favour, and I think they were last night.
Gary, he said after the final round, statistics are one thing, but being able to win golf tournaments is another. And this is a lot better feeling than having statistically another good week. Essentially, I guess, Gary, we've been saying that all year on the podcast, that his form, numbers-wise, has nearly been as good as previous seasons. But it doesn't matter at all if he's not actually winning.
I'm with with the rate that he's been winning the last five or six seasons, it's, the barometer changes enormously. You know, we haven't seen, not so much this year, but in previous years, previous 3 years, maybe it was kind of Tiger-like volume of victories. You know, even something Rory, I think four maybe is the most McIlroy's won in one season. So, and Harrington always alludes to this, you know, is there a purple patch in everyone's career? He thinks it's 18 months because he won his three majors in 18 months, but I don't really believe that. And it's wonderful arguing with Harrington about it. But at times you can kind of go, yeah, like you can't really keep up this four, five, six, seven wins a year. And give or take a bounce, I know he got a bad bounce of the ball last week, but give or take a bounce of the ball, he could easily have, you know, five or six victories this year. But winning is all that matters. And I think, and I'm probably being a bit harsh, but I think Rory took a bit of a break after the Open and went off and enjoyed himself, which he's totally entitled to do. I think he's a really good work-life balance. I think Scheffler is at a different stage in his career. You just get the impression that Scheffler went home from the Open and just practiced his ass off to get ready for this. You know, I know he played the week after, but, you know, he is real intent on this, where I think McIlroy is kind of at the top of Everest at the moment, enjoying it a little bit. I think he used this week as a warm-up for the last two. So they're just at different phases in their careers. And the hunger factor is probably there a little more for Scheffler. Not saying Rory gets his head back in the game. He still can't win in Atlanta and gets the whole thing. But you can just see the different stages they're at in their career. But there's no doubt Scheffler, because of that, has been very frustrated with the season, even though it's been stellar and he's the best player on the planet. It's just the stages they're at in their career, I think. So for him to get over the line in such fashion last night will, you know, really give him a good shot in the arm. And there's a bit of history between Rory and Scotty in Atlanta too. There's a six-shot lead there. So, you know, they're always a great talking point, and we just ideally want to see them both all firing and having a bounce off one another.
John, before we move off Scheffler, just that moment where it was the only bogey of his round, and for any of our listeners or viewers that haven't seen it, it was the third hole. He's in a greenside bunker and he hits the shot he fully intended to hit, and it lands on a sprinkler head and then takes an awful bounce off that, goes way beyond the pin and rolls off the green and into the water. It was just one of those really bad breaks. And in fairness to him, he bounced straight back from it and played the rest of his round, I think, at 4 under par, and just cruised home at the end. Not even, couldn't even see the fellow competitors in his rearview mirror. But on that, Radar in commentary said he wouldn't even have been thinking about that sprinkler head as he hit his shot. I'm looking at it going, shouldn't he have been though? Like, are these guys so good and they take time to look at their potential landing spots when they're taking bunker shots or approach shots and whatever it might be, trying to get up and down from these situations, that if he landed it exactly where he intended to land it, he probably should have been worrying a little that it could come down on the sprinkler head and maybe adjust for that.
Wow, you're asking a lot, I think. I mean, how big is this sprinkler head? I mean, that reminds me of the story of Monty playing with Langer in the Ryder Cup and giving the Langer the yardage, and Langer says, is that from the back of the sprinkler head or the front? I mean, that's precision on an unworldly scale. I mean, I probably Scheffler didn't even know the sprinkler head was there. I mean, he would certainly be not even thinking about it as he hit the shot. It's just one of those things that happens. I mean, you're actually speaking to somebody who had this similar thing happen in the... I still can't think about this. In 1985, qualifying for the Open, the last hole of the pre-qualifying, my second shot landed on the sprinkler head and bounced away through the green into the yard-high rough, and I took 3 more to get down and missed by a shot, and I never, ever did play in the Open. So if you're looking for sympathy for Scotty Scheffler here, you've come to the wrong place.
Good to see that you're over it though, John.
Exactly.
Gary, am I just being totally nonsensical? And
not at all. I think if you think about it logically, he landed the ball a lot closer to him than to his target, because it landed on the sprinkler, which then created no backspin and it released out. So he would have been trying to land it much further. He possibly caught it a little bit heavy, I'd imagine. And that's what happened. I'd imagine he was trying to fly the sprinkler by probably 7 or 8 feet and miss hit the shot.
Okay, so he maybe did know it was there, but he just didn't actually hit the shot that he was intending to hit. Look, I mean, it's tongue in cheek to some extent. He is who am I to tell Scotty Scheffler that he hasn't done his job properly there? We mentioned Sam Burns. Obviously, he's had a long season, hugely disappointing in some ways, really consistently good in others, close in a couple of majors, but he never came close to even landing a punch on Scheffler over the course of the 18 holes. Rory back after a month off, hadn't played since the Open last month. Gary spent some of that time partying in Ibiza, as we saw, as he's totally got the right to do. Fair play to him. He finished third last in the field, 8 over par, didn't break par all week, 25 shots off Scheffler, which is just mind-boggling. Now, he did play his last 10 holes yesterday in 4 under, so it does seemed like he maybe found a little bit, but in his post-round interview, he sounded like a guy who was a bit lost. Said the longer the round went on, that he felt he was getting further and further away from the feel he needs in his swing, and that he's got an awful lot of work to do in the next week to be remotely competitive at the BMW Championship. So is he just going through the motions here, Rory? Because we remember him speaking about the FedEx Cup playoffs after his final round at the Open, and he dismissed them almost of having any importance.
I think he's kind of going through a sense of discovery, really. He's obviously won at Augusta. And if he wins one major a year for the next 5 years, it will be absolutely phenomenal. And then the Open, you know, finished quietly, really. He wasn't really in the mix there. And he had this time planned off. He's a busy end to the season. He's kind of done it all FedEx wise, so I think he's going to be very keen for Doombeg and for Wentworth. He's obviously going to India, he's back to Australia. So I think that's where he's at with that. He came back in this week, you know, I more so hoping to have a decent solid week and find something. It was just a really difficult golf course. Like, you could see it last night. And I think Sam Burns was a bit unlucky. He hit a lot of really good shots, but that's the beauty of firm greens. So there was kind of nowhere to hide if you're a little bit off colour. But from his interview afterwards, I've no doubt he's keen to put the work in the next
couple of weeks and get back in the mix. I wouldn't read too much into it. I think he was just rusty and thought he wouldn't be as bad as he was, and he might have found something in play, which he didn't. But, you know, he's never going to be that far away. I think motivation is the key factor for him. He undoubtedly wasn't ready for it last week. I think he'll be fine. And he's trying to spread his wings as well. You know, he's playing a lot more around the world now. I don't know for a fact. It's only my opinion, but I don't think he is as bullish as being kind of out in the limb all the time for the PGA Tour. That's just my opinion.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. You've kind of flowered it up a bit there, Gary. If you compare him to where he were when he was the face of the PGA Tour and he was the leader of the fight back against Liv, he's a world away from that now, John, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if I was Rory, I'd still be lingering, feelings of slight resentment towards the PGA Tour. And I think his actions speak louder than his words. I mean, the fact that he's not going to complete the minimum this year, I think he's going to get to 14 instead of 15, which is only one off, but it's enough. Nobody else is doing that. And I think he's made, to be honest, I don't blame him for a minute. I think he was let down badly by the establishment in the form of the PGA Tour. He was the, as you say, he was the spokesman for all that was right, if everybody who thought Liv was wrong. And then they just, they pulled out the rug from underneath him. And if I was him, I'd still be feeling a little bit, off about that. And I do think as well that they've played so badly is after a month off is not a huge shock. I mean, he hasn't really been himself since Augusta. I mean, last year we had this big debate over how was Rory going to be motivated now that he'd completed the career Grand Slam. I mean, it was a big topic of conversation. He wins it again this year with something less than his best golf. I mean, I thought it was, to his enormous credit, the way he won. I mean, he didn't win the way that Rory normally wins. Rory at the top of his game would have won that thing by 6 or 7 this year, I think. But he did win it. And I do think that it's been all quiet on, where does Rory go from here? I think there's been a bigger reaction to him winning it again, ironically, than there was last year. I think he's even subconsciously, he's not been himself on the golf course ever since that he won that. I mean, there must have been a great, enormous feeling of satisfaction and an enormous high, adrenaline rush, whatever you want to call it. And to come, he's come down off that, and I think he's still fighting that a little bit. And he'll be back next year, I have no doubt. But I think we just give him a break for 2 or 3 months here. And I think that's what we've seen over the last few months.
I think, Dave, he's a bit like PSG in the group stages of the Champions League. You know, I think he's kind of in that, mindset. The thing is, with golf, you've got to be careful with that too. You know, as brilliant as he is and as easy as he makes the game, it's not a game that you can take for granted. And we saw that last week. You know, if you're not, physically, it's just easier, I think, in the media and when you're doing post-round interviews to talk about the physical of the game because he was hitting it right or left or he was doing this or that. That's just, but if you're not mentally switched on, and that was the genius of Woods. Didn't matter where he was switched on every single time. And no matter what Scotty Scheffler is going to do, and, let's hope he continues to play the way he does. Like, no one's ever going to touch the levels of Woods. And the levels of Woods were just that insane desire. But that only really lasted 11 years max, because kind of after 2009 and stuff, life got in the way and obviously stuff off the course got in the way, but that desire week in, week out. I just think Rory's in a bit of a lull at the moment. And that was evident last week, but I'm fully believe he'll be there or thereabouts in Atlanta. I think he'll eke his way back up a little bit more this week. And I think he'll be much sharper next week.
I guess if you are struggling to find some motivation, finishing 25 shots behind your current biggest rival, John, if he can't find some sort of an edge this week going into the BMW Championship to climb that leaderboard and put himself, as Gary says, in a position to contend in Atlanta, well, then he really is done for the year. Certainly, he might find his mojo again as he travels the world and gets back to Europe. But as regards the playoffs, this, you would expect him to grind this week and really work his damnedest to find something, because he can't be finishing 25 shots off the leader in any time.
You say that, though. I mean, he probably pitched up there. He wouldn't have high expectations after a month off. And it probably became quite clear to him sometime during the first round that he didn't have it that week. Now, if I'm Rory, Gary would be able to speak to this more. He's played tournaments for years.
I've finished 25 shots behind loads of times.
Probably so, yeah. But anyway, he'd be thinking to himself, you know what, I'm just going to work on my swing more than concentrate on the tournament itself. And I'm sure that's what Rory's been doing for the last two or three days. You know, sure. He'd be playing golf swing rather than golf tournament. And that's, you can't win doing that. Nobody has ever won doing that. I mean, his mind's off what it should be, and he's on to something else. And I can understand why he did it. I mean, he obviously wasn't 100% or anything or close to it. So that, to me, the temptation would be, I'm going to fix this for next week, and I don't really care about this week. And, you know, 25, you can talk about 25 shots. It didn't really matter how many it was. Once you get up to, you know, however many, 10, or anything like that, you're thinking of other things. I mean, Gary would be able to speak to this better than me, but that would be my impression, is that he kind of switched off as far as winning the tournament or even scoring that well. He was working on his swing more than anything.
Okay, well, that kind of, Gary, brings me on to the macro picture that are the FedEx Cup playoffs, because John described Rory there as, you know, playing golf swing rather than playing golf tournament. This is the first round of the playoffs. In any other sport, the playoffs are the be-all and end-all, whether it's the NFL or the Major League Baseball or the NBA, whatever it is. Everybody aims to get to the playoffs. That's when the season really begins. That's when the big prizes are handed out. Now, clearly, the season is long over as regards to the big prizes. And this is a tournament that Rory skipped last season, lest we remember. He essentially skipped it in some senses this time around as well. And there was no drama, little or no movement in the standings. Jordan Spieth missed out, having looked like he might make the top 50, but like, there was really no drama apart from that. And I know the PGA Tour have done their best to juice this baby up a bit as best they can in the last decade. They've tried anything and everything, every sort of format. They've got rid of the staggered leaderboard for this season's Tour Championship. The talk is that as of 2028, and their new revamped PGA Tour, that the playoffs will culminate with a match play tournament at a yet-to-be-revealed iconic venue. But doesn't Rory's attitude towards it rather sum up where the FedEx Cup playoffs are as an entity, as an object of interest and drama that most people can, particularly a lot of the viewers, can just take it or leave it?
Well, it's probably so, but it's like they're all, you know, there's 50 guys have moved on this week and 30 guys will move on next week, and they all have massively different agendas. You know, even for the likes of Shane Lowry, who's missed out, and Jordan Spieth, who's missed out, and Max Homa, they're probably the three big names. They're not, now, I guess Lowry and Spieth, because of the profile, will get a few invites to signature events, but the top 50 is a big thing, and next year is the Ryder Cup season. So for the Europeans and the Americans, it gives them a huge advantage being in that top 50 points-wise. I guess Rory's never going to say it, but it's probably not that big a deal for him anymore. I do feel that individual wins are way more important than the collective of, you know, a FedEx Championship. Let's say that he's 10th in the rankings or 12th. I wouldn't say it's not beneath him, because that's wrong to say, but I think if trying to rack up wins from here on in, and give it a lash for a good 4 or 5 years and see where it takes them. And that's going to be four tournaments a year, and probably an Irish Open or a Wentworth or, you know, a couple of the signatures. The Arnold Palmer is a special week. Riviera is a special week. He has one around there. So I think, and it's also his age profile too. You're just going to play less tournaments, the older, unless you're complete lunatic like Harrington, you're going to play 8 weeks in a row at almost 55 years of age. You know, I think he's just getting a little picky, and he's in a position to do that. So I fully believe that when the weeks are there for him to get ready, and I think he will be very disappointed with his major performance post Augusta. And no matter what you do in the game, you're always going forward and trying to learn. And he has to learn from that next season, because if he is to go 3 in a row at Augusta, he has to realize that that's the level that he's still at. So he needs to win more, you know, just change the mindset, win more of the others, you know, try be multiple in all of them. And that would be a good goal.
Irrespective of Rory's attitude towards the FedEx Cup playoffs, John, what are your thoughts on where we are with this and what can possibly be done with it?
Well, I'm like you. I mean, I just don't suspect that there's a lack of interest in Rory, especially. But it's even in the superstar guys, it's just a money grab. Let's be honest. There is no historical significance to this. I mean, I couldn't tell you who won it 5 years ago. Not even a clue who won it 5 years ago. I mean, that tells you everything. I mean, I'm supposed to know who won these things 5 years ago. I have no idea. It's not quite live golf, but it's getting that way. And I don't know. Do we need playoffs, PGA Tour playoffs? I mean, it used to be that it was just, you know, this guy won the most money and that was the end of it.
The PGA Tour's way of giving them more money.
Yes.
I think the Europeans do it best. You know, you finish up in Dubai and that's it. I don't know why they can't do the same here.
Yeah.
I think it's, if you think about it, it is a little bit harsh. If you look at what Ryan Fox did and Michael Brennan did last week, it's a bit harsh to cut it to 50. It's a bit harsh to cut it to 70. You know, it takes the jeopardy out of some guy at 100 can win and get in the top 30. I think that's more exciting for people. You know, if we keep, and this is the way it's going. It's, you know, it's happening all the tours. There's less guys keeping a status. There's more reduced events. And I love seeing the story where someone comes from the bleachers and just wins the bloody tournament, because as John was saying at the top of the show, consistency is, it's next to impossible in golf unless you're a Tiger Woods or a Scottie Scheffler. And the reality is very, very good players only play their best golf 5 or 6 times a year. Superstars do that about a dozen times. And the level of talent on tour, anyone can win on any given week. And if we're chopping these events down all the time, it's reducing that Cinderella story. And the Cinderella story is still a fascinating story. You know, we had the European, the Athletics last week, and we had, from an Irish point of view, we had loads of Cinderella stories. I think people still love that in sport. And you're going to get bored looking at the same guys every week. So I don't agree with the chopping it down. All these guys, the money's an irrelevance nowadays. It really is. Like, it's almost vulgar how much money they're playing for. And that will show its face. Guys in certain events, you know, not really caring that much. And that's exactly what's happening.
And in fairness, there has been a good few of those stories this season, hasn't there? We've seen, you know, Aaron Rye and Ryan Fox, just in two of the majors alone, but there's been plenty of them across the PGA Tour season as well. You're never going to get them, as you say, Gary and John, in the actual FedEx Cup playoffs.
Yeah, well, I think Gary's right that the one big, massive tournament at the end with a Tour Championship title on it would actually mean a bit more than what we're seeing right now. And I would go as far as to suggest that, based on watching the US amateur last week, and the amateur over here is the same, you know, two-round stroke play, match play, that's different. I would watch that. I like match play. I mean, it doesn't always produce the best player of the week. I mean, you know, we've said a million times, you can go out and shoot 7 under and get beat, and the guy in the next game shot 5 over and he's won. He's still playing tomorrow. But I can live with that. I mean, that's golf. I mean, that's proper golf. And I think that, you know, the more I think about it, that a US amateur style event at the end would at least be different, and stick the Tour Championship title on it, as I say, and it's a big deal. And give, you know, however much money you want to give them, it's fine. But that would be far more interesting to me than the situation we've got right now.
And that looks like the way they are going to go, if the rumours are to be believed, that in 2028 it will be a match play format. Now, I think the PGA Tour, they hark back to the World Match Play Championship days, Gary, and they see two no-names playing each other in the final over 36 holes.
I know, but But Dave, when we were growing up, like the match play in Wentworth was one of the most entertaining golf tournaments
in October.
Yeah, it was, you know,
there'll be people listening to us, Gary, that are too young to remember those days.
Well, go on YouTube and you'll see some of the best golf you've ever seen by the greats as well.
Yeah, I mean, the leaves have started to fall around Wentworth, and all the autumnal colours have broken out. And Seve's playing Ian Woosnam in an 18-hole match play final, and it's they were great days. And even though it wasn't even a ranking event, it seemed to mean so much. Look, they need to change it up in some way, shape, or form, because right now, as you say, John, it's just a money grab, and nobody can hand on heart genuinely say that they care one way or the other what way the next 2 weeks unfold. We barely mentioned Shane Lowry. Obviously, his season as regards the PGA Tour is done. He can rest up a bit before he returns to Europe for the Irish Open and the conclusion of the DP World Tour season. He ended 3 over, 12 places outside the top 50 needed to make the BMW Championship. He might still do something special later in the year. Justin Rose with the low round of the day, 64. So he might be one to keep an eye on this week. We'll move away from that and move to some other news. The DP World Tour, real drama this week, because we saw a shootout between two Danes in Jeff Winter and Rasmus Højgaard. They both made eagle within 5 minutes of each other. It was incredible TV, and the crowd, obviously the local crowd, were just beside themselves. They were being really treated well, and they were getting their money's worth for their admission fee. The sponsor must have been happy. And yet, Gary, as you understand, there will be no Danish Golf Championship in 2027.
Yes, it's bizarre, really, because and we've chatted about this previously on the podcast with the rise of amateur golf in Denmark and how it's filtered through to so many good young Danish pros on Challenge Tour, on DP World Tour, and obviously the few superstars, the Ryder Cup players and stuff. So Danish golf is extremely strong at the moment. And Jeff Winter said it in his post-round interview. You know, he was being carried along by the energy of the crowd all week, not just on Sunday. Now, it kind of has had a checkered past with, I don't know, with promoters or with sponsorship, but they've never really been able to find a home. I don't know if the financials make sense. I'm not sure. There did seem to be a very good crowd there. But it is disappointing that golf in kind of Northern Europe is not... doesn't seem to be as sustainable as they want it to be. So they're going to pause it for next season. And the promoter briefly mentioned some Norwegian Danish alliance or something. I don't know if Victor Hovland's going to come home and do an event, but it is a pity, because like that was really good drama coming down the stretch yesterday. You know, Jeff Winter, he's 110. It's kind of the story we were talking about earlier. You know, he gets to win the tournament, his home open, the fifth major. You know, it's the biggest event you can win outside of the majors for your national open as such. But what a finishing hole as well, 165 yards, pure panic. I thought it was great. It's just disappointing, it really is.
Yeah, it's sad, this, actually, because no matter how good it was yesterday, and it was terrific to watch, this just adds to the... those who argue that this 10 players getting their PGA Tour cards off the DP World Tour every year is madness. Because, like it or not, the Danish, if I'm the Danish sponsor, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I want both the twins here. I want both the Højgaards playing, not just Rasmus. Rasmus was only there because he didn't make it into the playoffs on the PGA Tour. And his brother was somewhere else. He was nowhere near Denmark. Yeah. That has an impact, I would think, if I'm a sponsor. You think to yourself, you know what, this is probably not going to get any better. Because presumably, I mean, Rasmus and those guys are young enough, they're still improving. The chances of them playing next year, less than this year. You know, they're both going to kick on, you would think, or hope. And, you know, if I'm a Danish sponsor, I'm thinking to myself, you know what am I paying this money for? I'm not getting the best field, and I'm certainly not getting the guys that are going to make the crowds come out in Denmark. And, you know, I'm thinking out loud here, but that maybe had an impact.
Yeah, it's a real shame. And it's just another kind of dent in the DP Tour World Tour schedule around this time of the season when they do spend the vast majority of their time in Europe as opposed to elsewhere around the world. On the DP World Tour, John, they came out last week and said that the softening of their stance towards LIV golf players will not be extended into next year. That's while they are obviously in a position where they'll welcome back players like Garcia, who has signaled his intention to take out DP World Tour membership in 2027. If you are playing conflicting events on another tour, i.e. LIV, that the fines and the suspensions will be triggered again, and they simply just won't accept it next year as they did for certain events this year. It's another blow to LIV, who are obviously just reeling from dent to dent to their potential to go forward as a going concern into the future. Are you surprised that the DP Tour who have taken this stance, or was it always inevitable?
I'm not surprised, not even a little bit. This is the equivalent of the heavyweight boxer punching the guy on the way down. this is DP World Tour just taking advantage, and I don't blame them for a minute.
They don't often get to flex, sure they don't, but they're in a position to do so here.
Exactly, they're in a stronger position than they were, 6 months ago, certainly. And the Asian Tour jumping into bed with them and the PGA Tour was yet another blow to the LIV players. These guys are running out of options, and the DP World Tour are well aware of that. And they're basically saying, well, if you want to come back, you've got to do X, Y, and Z, and not just X and Y now. There's more conditions. We're in a stronger position. We've got more leverage. You've got fewer cards to play with. And this, what they're doing is simply a reflection of that. I think good on them. I mean, they could be accused of being bullies, but the PGA Tour are even bigger bullies. They've been bullies for decades. And the European Tour are just following that lead, it seems to me.
We have to speak about LIV Golf, certainly when I'm on the podcast, Gary, at least once a week. And that news from the DP World Tour coincides with the confirmation. Well, a confirmation is the wrong word. It hasn't actually been confirmed by LIV Golf themselves, but the reportage is to be believed. The season-ending team event due to take place in Michigan at the end of the month has been cancelled. LIV haven't officially made a comment on it yet, but the tickets are, you can no longer buy them online. LIV's official website has stated both ground passes and hospitality passes are no longer available. So it would seem that this week's event in Indianapolis will be the final tournament of the season. And who knows, could be the final LIV tournament of all time, because they did say, obviously, last week that they had secured an unnamed lead investor. It's all very cloak and dagger at the moment to say the identity of who that might be, just to keep the competition running into 2027 after the withdrawal of the Saudi funding. But I don't think it was any surprise that the team event was going to be cancelled. It's all a bit farcical, isn't it? That, the so-called biggest draw of your tour, this team vibe, and you've just cancelled the one team event you have all season.
Yeah, and it's purely phenomenal. Chopping up shop, what's the point spending another 50-100 million on a week that literally means nothing? I do think, though, yeah, it's done. Like, it's take a fork of me. It's over. I do see, though, a huge opportunity. I know they're not going to do it, but like, if you had 10 or 15 of the best players on Liverpool, and they're all former European Tour players. Seemingly, Lucas Herbert was trying to play in the Irish Open, and he's a former champion, and he can't get in. I think that's wrong. I think if you're a former champion of a tournament, you're of age, you're under 50, you're more than entitled to taking a strong stance on this. Allegedly, Surratt, who played last week, he's allegedly gone to tour school. And then the other side of the argument is, and it is true, because, we're going to have tour school starting next month, and it's going to be full of hopefuls and full of dreamers. But for the guys that can do it and are good enough, they will get through it. The only problem with that now is the category watch. You trying to keep a card at a tour school is nearly next to impossible. But for the younger guys, I think Ballester is going to do.
I'm having a bit of a problem with Gary's line. We may well have lost him just for the moment. We'll try and get him back quickly. John, next year's European Tour has the potential to be the deepest in terms of the profile of the players on the card from week to week that it's been in the last 25 years, maybe even going all the way back into the, you know, the Alassabel, Seve, Faldo, Woosnam, Sandy Lyle days.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. You're right. I think that the DP World Tour, European Tour, they need to be a little bit careful in how difficult they make it for these live guys. You know, you would want them back. I mean, there's any number of tournaments on the DP World Tour where, you know, week to week, the field is not that great. And even the likes of Poulter, Westwood, Graham McDowell, those guys are names. I would still, if I'm a sponsor of a weaker European Tour event, I would want those guys in the field because they're a great early week story, if nothing else. And, you know, they'd still be reasonably competitive at that level. And you know, playing every week again, you know, they would get a little bit better again. And I think their enthusiasm for it would be high. And I think the European Tour, they do need to be careful. I mean, you don't want to lose the likes of Thomas Peters and Dietrich, the Belgian lads. I mean, I'm hearing through the grapevine that they might be going to the tour school at the end of the year. But as Gary says, that needs to be looked at as well. The tour school cards for the last few years have been not worthless, but they've been getting close to that. And that is something, again, they need to look at. There's so many decisions the European Tour need to make behind the scenes to get it right, keep the rank and file who stayed, stayed because probably nobody lived didn't want them. But anyway, that's by the by. They need to keep them happy, but they don't, and they need to make it. They need to set up some hoops for these guys to jump through before they get back on tour, but not too many hoops. The DP World Tour is not that in that strong a position to dictate. You know, you've got to do 10 things. I mean, that's too much.
But there are ways and means, Gary, aren't there, that they can provide some loopholes, they can provide some exemptions to, you know, 25-year veterans or guys who...
It's basically, especially for Ballester and Puge, like if they're young Spanish kids, went off to live for 3 or 4 years, made a boatload of cash, and it's now, they're kind of starting out now, but they're multimillionaires. So it's different from coming out of college and you don't have an arse in your trousers or whatnot. But and they're good enough. You know, the cream will always rise to the top. I just think looking at the European Tour week in, week out, it's very bereft of any depth of the back. And certainly for want, even... Now, they're too old, but even for the likes of a Poulter or Westwood or stuff, you know, there's no old-school star quality in the middle. You know, that might be on Wayne, per se, but they'll still sell tickets. So I think if they navigated carefully, that could make the tour a lot stronger. Because, you know, aside from Jeff Winter yesterday and Rasmus, the two local heroes, like that leaderboard is not... you know, an easy sell, really. So they're not in a position to be turning down a lot of talent either, I don't think.
They could be in a position where for a regular run-of-the-mill European Tour event in June or July that you have like 10 to 12 Ryder Cup stars teeing it up. And if the Q School goes the way you've been describing it, John, this year, that should be televised live. I would tune in to watch all of these guys who've got like 50 Ryder Cup appearances between them scrapping it out for three spots.
Yeah, well, I've long argued that should be televised anyway, because every year you read about it, only read about it because you don't see it, but that every year there is a triumph. A guy makes the most unlikely eagle near the end of the last round to get himself the card, and equally there's a guy takes a nine somewhere near the end, chokes with the pressure and just misses out. I mean, every year there's that. I mean, it'd be a fascinating watch, no matter who's involved.
Yeah, if any of our listeners have not read John Feinstein's Tales from Q School book, have a read of it. It's going back a bit now. It's going back a generation, but my God, it's absolutely riveting stuff to have a read of that and the trials and tribulations and the pressure that these guys are under. Because unlike the FedEx Cup playoffs where these guys are playing for an extra 10 mil, these guys are playing basically to pay the mortgage next month, and it's gripping stuff. Last couple of bits and pieces. Gary, the Walker Cup team for the United States that will represent their country at next month's event at La Hinch was confirmed this week. I don't know if you've got any comments on who surprised you or whether there was a couple of additions to it that you weren't expecting. And then obviously the GB&I team is going to be named next week.
Yeah, the GB Knight team is announced tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow. Okay. So we'll be able to discuss that next week's pod.
Yeah, so the Americans finalized. The American team is loaded. It's, I wouldn't say they're the Harlem Globetrotters, but on paper, they're very, very strong. I do think Dean Robertson, the captain, will be delighted with Jack Whaley winning the US Amateur. He played the Western Amateur and didn't play in Lahinch, which might have irked Robertson. But listen, you win the US Amateur, it doesn't matter, you're in the team. And it would be mental to think that he wouldn't get picked.
Is there even a chance that he's not going to be named on that team next week?
He's automatic. If you win the US Amateur, okay, you get a spot.
Yeah. But he was 90th in the world rankings coming into it. So he probably, you know, was there or thereabouts. He had a very good college career, transferred to Florida State. He's obviously a top player. It's a huge win for him. It's a great backstory as well. So there's five GB Knight picked from the world rankings. Stuart Graham is obviously sixth. Jack will be seventh. So I do think that will help Team GB and I, because you got the US champion, US amateur champion at one end, and the old British amateur champion, as I keep calling him, but the amateur champion. So that helps. But America are very strong on paper, but it's played in Lahinch. If the weather's a little bit mucky, that will level things out fantastically well. And I'm fascinated to see what Robertson announces tomorrow. And does he? He'll probably pull a rabbit from the hat in some shape or form. Hopefully that means a second Irish guy on the team. But yeah, it's going to be a spectacular tournament. Like, I caddied in 91 in Portmarnock, and I was only a kid. I was 18 years of age. It was, you know, it was a lifetime experience. So hopefully some young kid down there will be on the team in years to come. But who he picks tomorrow is very, very much up in the air. Because, the, you know, Tyler Weaver is probably their best player on paper. He's been out injured most of the season. And the guys that kind of should have stepped up this summer haven't done. So I wouldn't say it's an easy team to pick. But it will be, the Americans coming over are very, very good. And they'll have their work cut out to try to beat them.
Well, one of them is going to be Jay Leng Jr., who was the runner-up in the US Amateur at the weekend, beaten by Jack Whaley. He's just the second Englishman to win the event since 1911. John, I'm sure you could tell us who the other guy was.
Well, I know Richie Ramsay from Scotland.
I'm not talking about Scots. You can't always make it about the Scots, John.
No, you've got me. Who's the other one?
Gary.
Matt Fitzpatrick from Brooklyn.
Of course.
On the tip of your tongue, as always, yeah. Gary. Well done to you. But I can't account for that young man. Fitzpatrick in 2013. So look, it's amazing for Whaley out of Florida State, 22 years of age. He's got a place at the Masters, the US Open, and the Open at St. Andrews next year, which is just absolutely unbelievable. But I'm sure Jay Leng will come to Lahinch maybe with a point to prove. The conditions were awful. Like, we've been bathe in sunshine in the UK and Ireland here for so many weeks now. And it was at Merion where people will remember Hogan's Alley, where the US Open Championship was won by Justin Rose 13 years ago now. But it was lashing rain, really damp conditions. The ball wasn't travelling very far. And, you know, they had the umbrellas up and the wets on, which we haven't seen any golfers having to wear for quite some time now. So they really had to grind it out. So fair play to Jack Whaley for that. I think that's pretty much us done, lads. It's been an interesting week, as interesting as it can get, with the FedEx Cup playoffs not really delivering apart from the eye-catching performance from Scotty Scheffler. A reminder that it is the BMW Championship in the US this week. On the LPGA, it's the Canadian Open in Alberta, and the Ryan Line will obviously be back with you on Thursday. So, John, thanks a million for joining us. We'll speak to you again very soon. We definitely have to have a sort of a State of the Nation podcast with yourself, John, in maybe November, early December, when the DP Tour World Tour season has wrapped up and the Walker Cup is done and the President's Cup is done and everything that's remotely worth talking about in terms of the competitive sense of the game is done. We'll
speak to Dave, you. Aaron.
Yes.
Just a quick one. Sorry to cut across you. You are talking about that live access. So the Hotel Planner Challenge Tour that was in Killeen Castle, Justin Harding won it. He actually went to live for a little bit and got blackballed. So, but he's back winning on that tour now, which kind of sets him up to get his card back. So
you know, that is the route you can take if you have to do it. But it was a big win for him at Killeen. And great news for Mark Partey, who won the leading Irish, the Christy O'Connor Award. So that gets him into doing big. So little green shoots from the second tour.
Do you think we might see the likes of Sergio Garcia duking it out on the chat tour the year next week? Because he comes across as the kind of guy that would be perfectly happy to eat humble pie and head down the rungs of the ladder in a bid to get himself back up. I'm sure Sergio would be.
Absolutely.
But look,
you have clearly never met Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, obviously not. Look, we mock him from time to time and he doesn't do himself any favours. But we've mentioned it already a couple of times on the pod today that getting the likes of Garcia and Stenson and Westwood and Poulter and GMAC and all these guys back playing regular events in the European Tour it'll be absolutely brilliant. And who knows, they could all potentially rock up at an Irish Open next year, which would be amazing. And at some point, John, if the developments over the next 12 months go as we expect them to, there will be discussions around all of those guys as potential future Ryder Cup captains again. There's still an awful lot of water that needs to flow under the bridge. But if you'd spoken about this 12 months ago, you would have said it's out of the question. This will never happen. It's an impossibility. We can't, as things stand now, say that anymore.
Yeah, I think it's gone from impossible to very unlikely. That's how much it's progressed.
Well, maybe 12 months time from now, you'll have to upgrade that overall assessment.
I hope so. I'll be all right.
Yeah, me too. Me too. John, Gary, brilliant. Thanks a million. Ryan Lyon coming with you with Nathan and Shane on Thursday. We'll chat to you again next week. Until then, thanks for listening.
All my exes wear Rolex, but I reside right here in Dardanelle. JD starter kit right here.